Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Sciences. Now, I am going to record the next poet of the poem, William Butler Yeats. Introduction. William Butler Yeats was a famous Irish poet. He began his life as a leader in the Irish National Revival of the 1880s, which used the subject matter from Celtic legends and a somewhat flowery style. But from the period of the Great War, Yeats adopted a plainer style and the themes of contemporary interest. Yeats' later poetry is the best. This cannot be said of most English poets. William Butler Yeats as a poet. Yeats was an Irish man, but he takes his place among the great English poets of the age. His greatness as a poet is now an accepted fact. Tributes to his greatness have been paid from time to time by the eminent poets and critics of the day. Thus, J.W. Beach calls him the finest of the British poets of the modern age. According to Fraser, Yeats claims for the position of a major English poet and ranks himself with Donne, with Milton and with Wordsworth, and considered him very much superior to Browning, to Tennyson and to Arnold. He is largely free from the freaks and whims, the eccentricities and incoherent ramblings which characterize much contemporary poetry. Yeats's poetry variety and uniformity. Yeats is great by virtue of the bulk and variety of his poetry, and critics are agreed that very few of his poems can be regarded as definitely inferior. His work is uniformly good, even though he writes on such varied subjects as ancient legends, mythology, folklore, politics, history, love, and constantly makes new myths of his own. His creative range is immense. He writes with perfect ease and mastery on the themes taken from every standard of performance. He has maintained his standard throughout. His early poetry. The greatest quality of Yeats's poetry is that it goes on and on day by day. There is no sudden change or break in its continuity, but a slow evolution, and the seeds of future are to be found in what has gone before. His early poetry is romantic, while the later one is realistic in both theme and treatment. His early poems are affected by Pre-Raphaelites and the use of Irish mythology and folklore. In later poems, their graver philosophy and spiritual tone can be seen. Realism in his poetry. Graham Hogg says Yeats is the last of the great romantics. As in his previous poems, there are romanticism and pre-Raphaelitism. Similarly, in his later poems, there are realism and philosophy. In keeping with modern realistic trend, there is greater and greater approximation to speech, rhythms and colloquial diction. Natural words in natural orders are the ambition of the poet. Symbolism. Yeats was a great symbolist from the beginning of to the end of his career, so that Arthur Symons regards him as the chief exponent of the symbolist movement in England. In the early phase of his career, his symbols are elementary and there are no obstacles in the way of readers. Thus, a number of early poems are organized around the rose symbols, a symbol largely traditional and so easy to understand. Yeats makes use of symbols to convey his inner sensations, his vision and trances, and his mystic experiences, which cannot be conveyed by any other way. At their best, Yeats's symbols are highly suggestive. As a mythmaker, Kenneth Brooks regards Yeats as a great myth maker and his vision as the most ambitious attempt made by any poet of our time to set up a myth. In the very opening Easter 1960, for example, we get the myth of Yeats. Yeats invites new myths, uses old ones in changed context, or invests them with new significance. His mysticism. Yeats was a conscious artist who polished and repolished his verses and tried to say what he had to say beautifully and clearly and musically, like a true artist. He selects his words with reference both to their senses and sounds. As time went on, he increasingly tried to conform his closely as possible to everyday speech. As an artist, he had the creative gift and the inward conviction, and his so-called arrogance arises from his assurance. Metrical artist. Yeats was a great metrist who experimented with a variety of stanza and verse forms. He kept away from the verse libre and other technical innovation of his day, but he used the traditional meters and stanza forms with consummate skill. He freed the English lyric from the tyranny of the iambic and manipulated the stress, pause and cadence of the long line with great mastery and self-confidence. He had a Donne-like command over stanza structure and made his stanza patterns correspond with the movement of thought and emotion, the sudden swift turn in tone and mood, often within the same line, further indicates Yeats' affinity with Donne and his school. Thus, Yeats had a creative gift, he had the inner convictions, he had wisdom, he had full command over his resources, and there are the very qualities that go into the making of the great poet. Now, the first poem of the W.B. Yeats is The Second Coming. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the poem The Second Coming, the poet W.B. Yeats presents his philosophy about the rise and fall of civilization. According to him, the present civilization, what we see today, begins with the birth of Christ. In the beginning, this civilization was very narrow, but as the time goes on, it begins a new and great civilization. He presents a symbol of a bird, falcon, who moves round a center. As it goes on moving, it goes beyond the limit. It could not hear its master's call, and thus both have separated. There is mainly confusion and disorder in the world. There is bloodshed and violence everywhere. The best people have lost all faith because they fully indulge in violence. The first coming was the birth of Christ 2000 years ago when the Greco-Roman civilization broke down. Now the poet feels the second incarnation is also about to come, because there is a fearful devil whose head is very like a man and his body is as fearful as a lion. This fearful beast has arisen in Christian civilization. It goes towards Bethlehem with awkward movements. It seems that it too will take birth there, and its birth is the death of the present civilization. It is the second coming. प्रस्तुत कविता द्वितीय आगमन के अंतर्गत कवि डब्ल्यू बी यीट्स अपने दर्शन को व्यक्त करते हुए सभ्यता के उत्थान एवं पतन के बारे में बताते हैं. उनके अनुसार वर्तमान सभ्यता जिसे हम देखते हैं ईसा मसीह के जन्म के साथ प्रारंभ हुई है. प्रारंभ में यह सभ्यता बहुत ही संकुचित थी, किंतु जैसे जैसे समय बीतता गया समय व्यतीत हुआ यह एक नई और महान सभ्यता बन गई. वह एक प्रतीक के माध्यम से बताता है कि जिस प्रकार एक बाज पक्षी अपनी धुरी पर घूमता है और घूमते घूमते अपनी सीमा के बाहर चला जाता है तथा अपने मालिक से अलग हो जाता है, और इस प्रकार दोनों अलग हो जाते हैं, जिससे मात्र संसार में संदेह और अनियमितता रह जाती है और मात्र रक्तपात और हिंसा बची रहती है। अच्छे लोग अपना विश्वास खो देते हैं और बुरे लोगों को विश्वास बनाने की आवश्यकता नहीं रहती, क्योंकि वे पूर्णतया हिंसा में लिप्त रहते होते हैं। ईसा मसीह का जन्म प्रथम आगमन था 2000 वर्ष पहले, जब ग्रेशियो रोमन सभ्यता का अंत हुआ था। अब कभी मानता है कि दूसरा आगमन होने वाला है, क्योंकि एक भयानक दैत्य जिसका सिर तो मनुष्य का है किंतु शरीर भयानक सिर का आने वाला है। यह भयानक जानवर ईसाई सभ्यता में जाग चुका है और बेतलहम की ओर बढ़ रहा है। ऐसा प्रतीत हो रहा है कि यह वहीं से जन्म लेगा। इसके जन्म का अर्थ होगा वर्तमान सभ्यता की मृत्यु एवं पूर्णतः विनाश। यह द्वितीय आगमन है। नाउ द क्रिटिकल अप्रिसिएशन ऑफ द पोएम। द बेस्ट लैक ऑल कन्विक्शंस व्हाइल द वर्स्ट आर फुल ऑफ पैसिनेट इंटेंसिटी। द पोएम द सेकेंड कमिंग इज अ रिवोल्यूशनरी फिलोसफिकल poem of W.B. Yeats. It has been regarded as one of the finest poems of Yeats. The philosophy moves very like thesis, antithesis and synthesis. What we see today, tomorrow it will be fully lost. Nothing will remain. If we make a serious study of the poem, we shall get a great universal truth. The poet presents a very realistic view of his time. The First World War was going on. There was a great bloodshed and violence. Innocent and the good people were being killed. The worst men were ruling over them. There was neither peace nor joy nor any rules and regulations. Every good and honest person was puzzled. In such a situation, Yeats thinks about the great harbinger of God, Jesus Christ. He came on the earth before 2000 years, when the Roman civilization had come to an end and there were merely violence and disorder in the world. The birth of Jesus Christ was to him the first coming. His civilization was very narrow at that time, but by and by it went on increasing. But after 2000 years, there comes once again a great havoc in the form of a fearful beast, whose head is like a man, but his body is as lion, who likes bloodshed and violence and disorder in the world. And this fearful beast has been hidden in the mind of the Christian people of today. According to him, this fearful beast is going at the same place where the Christ had taken birth. To him, it is the second coming. The philosophy of the poem has no doubt humanitarian attitude. To him, there are two types of man in the modern age. The best people have lost their faith and worst have no need of faith, because they believe in violence and murder and disorder. Now the good people have been hidden in the narrow place, while the worst are ruling over the state. This ideology has come from Spiritus Mundi to kill the humanity. W.B. Yeats is the greatest symbolist. Here he also uses two great symbols. Falcon symbolizes the intellect or active mind, and the soul or the spiritual part of man. Intellect implies science and rationalism. It is now too much with us. It is taking us towards the destruction. The idea of Spiritus Mundi is that Christian forces are almost spent and that a new brutal force is about to come. So far as the artistic point of view is concerned, the poem touches the highest place. The style of the poem is very grave, deductive, thoughtful and full of philosophy. The language is effective, lucid, simple and fulfills the purposes of the poet to reveal his object. The poem is written in a blank verse, Many symbols have been used. The poem is no doubt figurative. There is alliteration, simile, apostrophe, and personification. Thus, the poem, The Second Coming, is a remarkable philosophical prophecy of Yeats. Its theme and thought are realistic. Its art is truly effective. So, the poet is successful in his aim. Now, the explanation of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed and everywhere. The ceremony of innocence is drawn. The best lack all convictions, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem The Second Coming, composed by one of the best poets of the modern age, W.B. Yeats. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the world. According to him, how the world is busy in getting and spending, and there is no joy and peace. He presents a very philosophical idea that 2000 years ago there came a great change by the birth of Jesus Christ. But nowadays, once again, there is a great violence and disorder. Yeats was a very sincere poet. He saw how the Irish people have been killed by the Britishers. So he imagines that the great devil has come once again. Now, explanation. Here the poet says that a civilization begins with a great person such as Christ. At first, the civilization is very narrow, but gradually it becomes a new civilization. Here he presents a very great philosophy to him. The falcon moves around a center. As it goes on moving, it goes beyond the limit. It could not hear its master's call, and thus it is separated from his master. Then there is only confusion and disorder in the world. There is bloodshed and violence everywhere. Traditional and aristocratic way of life has encouraged purity and innocence. Now it is towards destruction. The best people have lost all faith. The worst people have no need of any faith. They may be full of passionate intensity without the control of any faith or wisdom. Now the next stanza of the poem. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with loin body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow things while all about it real shadows of the indignant desert birds. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet W.B. Yeats expresses his idea about the way of the world. According to him, the world is ever changing. Here he presents an example of Jesus Christ. To him, when the Roman Empire came to an end, there were merely bloodshed and disorder. At that time, Christ came and saved the world. After 2000 years, there comes once again a great devil violence to destroy the whole humanity. Explanation. Here the poet says that the first coming was the birth of Christ. 2000 years ago, Greco-Roman civilization broke down. Then God entrusted himself to come in the form of Christ. Now a second coming, second incarnation seems to be ready. When this idea comes to the poet's mind, at once he sees a vast dragon, it coming out of Spiritus Mundi. Spiritus Mundi is a kind of a storehouse of images in Yeats's philosophy. It is an image with a man's head and lion's body. This beast has pitiless blank gait. It moves its slow thigh. The angry birds over the desert see it. They begin to cry. Now, the last stanza of the poem. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, it's overcome round at last, searches towards Bethlehem to be born. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet W.V. Yeats expresses his idea about the present world. According to him, after 2000 years of Jesus Christ's birth, there comes once again a great devil of destroy, the world's humanity. Now, explanation. Here, the poet says that the world's the second coming bring a very fearful imagination. That image is very like a dreadful dragon. The beast has been sleeping 20 centuries of Christian civilization, but now it is about to appear in the world. This will be the second coming. He goes towards Bethlehem with the awakened movement, as if it too would be born there. Its birth is the death of the present civilization. Thank you. This is the end of the poem, The Second Coming. Now, the next poem of the W.B. Yeats. Easter, 1916. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the present poem, Easter 1916, the poet W.B. Yeats expresses his deep feeling about the world where there is only disorder and bloodshed. Here he says that he often met some of the leaders of the Irish Revolution who were executed by a firing squad consequent upon the uprising of people in the Easter 1916. The poet further says that he has met these men while they were returning from their office. After the day's work was over, often he has stopped to exchange his formal conversation with them, though these people have nothing special about them, and they belong to the common rank. By their death transform, the poet calls this transformation the birth of a terrible beauty. The poet further refers to the life of a certain woman who was one of them. Her name was Constance Marquise, a Polish lady who after her marriage became shrivd and not leading a virtuous life. She was talkative and ignorant. When she was young, she was under the ruffians, but by sacrificing her life for the freedom of her country, all these lapses in her underwent a sudden transformation by the Irish people for whom she gave her life. Then there was a poet named Patrick Pearse who also gave his life for his countrymen. His friend who helped him was organizing the revolution. His name was Patrick Denabue. He was a postmaster and the leader of the revolt. Then there was MacBride. He was a drinker and lacked moral sense, yet he was also given a good place due to his sacrifice. The poem now takes a turn. The poet asks a question, what it good to give the life? To him, it was right because Ireland was awakened to the gruesome tragedy of the Easter Rebellion of 1916. By this revolution, England had promised independence to Ireland, and the poet is prepared to believe that she may keep her promises. Though there is a tension of opposites in the poem, yet his tension gives a faithful picture of life. हिंदी सारांश प्रस्तुत कविता ईस्टर 1916 के अंतर्गत कवि W.B. यीट्स ने ऐसी दुनिया के बारे में वर्णन किया है जहां मात्र अराजकता, अव्यवस्था एवं रक्तपात है। यहां वह कहता है कि वह आयरलैंड की महान क्रांति से जुड़े अनेक नेताओं से मिलता है। ब्रिटिश द्वारा गोलीबारी में मारे गए लोगों की यह घटना ईस्टर 1916 के नाम से प्रसिद्ध हुई। कवि आगे कहता है कि वह इन लोगों से तब मिलता था जब वे अपने ऑफिस से लौटते थे। वह उन्हें अक्सर सामान्य बातचीत करने हेतु रोक लेता था। यद्यपि इन दोनों में कोई विशेष बातचीत नहीं हुई और वे सामान्य व्यक्ति थे, किंतु गोली खाने के बाद वे पूर्णतया बदल गए। कवि उन्हें भयानक सौंदर्य का प्रतीक बताता है। तत्पश्चात कवि एक महिला का उदाहरण प्रस्तुत करता है जो उन लोगों में एक थी। उसका नाम कॉन्स्टेंस मार्कविक्स था, जो विवाहोपरांत कॉन्स्टेंस गोरबूथ हो गई। वह बहुत कठोर एवं दुराचारी महिला थी। वह बातूनी अभद्र महिला थी। जब वह युवा थी तो गलत व्यक्तियों का के मध्य थी, किंतु आज़ादी के लिए कुर्बानी करने के से उसके जीवन में महान परिवर्तन हो गया और आयरलैंड के लोगों ने उसे महान स्थान प्रदान किए जिनके लिए उसने अपने प्राणों की आहुति दी। तत्पश्चात एक कवि पैट्रिक पियर्स था जिसने अपने देश के लिए प्राण आहुति दी। उसका मित्र क्रांति करने में उसकी सहायता करता था। उसका नाम पैट्रिक डेनव्यू था जो एक पोस्टमास्टर था और क्रांति का नेता था। एक मैकब्राइड था जो पियक्कड़ एवं नैतिक विहीन व्यक्ति था, फिर भी उसे महान स्थान प्रदान किया गया क्योंकि उसने देश के लिए कुर्बानी दी थी। कविता में एक परिवर्तन आता है। कवि एक प्रश्न करता है कि क्या उनका जीवन का बलिदान देना उचित था। उसके अनुसार यह सही था क्योंकि आयरलैंड जागृत हो चुका था तथा 1916 में ईस्टर की दुखद घटना हो चुकी थी। इस महान क्रांति के कारण इंग्लैंड ने आज़ादी देने की प्रतिज्ञा की थी तथा कवि को विश्वास है कि वह अपनी प्रतिज्ञा पूरी करेगा। यद्यपि विरोधियों में अभी तनाव था, किंतु उनका तनाव ही कविता को विश्वास प्राप्त जीवन प्रदान करता है। नाउ द क्रिटिकल अप्रिशिएशन ऑफ द पोएम। इन द पोएम Easter 1916, the poet presents a very vivid and organic picture of Ireland. According to him, the Easter 1960 is no doubt a terrible beauty. It is terrible because there is merely bloodshed and violence, but on the other hand, it is beautiful. It is beauty because by that terrible moment there comes freedom in Ireland. The poet writes further in Easter 1916. According to him, he has often met some of the leaders of the Irish Revolution who were executed by a firing squad consequent upon the uprising of people in Easter 1916. These persons were no saints. They were ordinary people. They were working in some offices and while returning from their desks at the close of the day, the poet had seen them and exchanged from formal conversation with them. One of them was a polished lady who was beautiful, talkative and often foolish. In this group there was a man named Constance Marquis who was running a school. He was also writing poetry. His friend Patrick Denebue was a man of promise. This man was polite, sensitive, and had real leadership. There was another man, MacBride, who was a drunkard. He was proud and had moral lapses in his character. Yeats had reasons to be annoyed with him because he had snatched away Maud Gonne, whom Yeats loved and hoped to marry. Though all these persons had nothing extraordinary in them, yet by their heroic sacrifice they have been transformed and have reached another dimension for the assessment of their personality. Though many men and women sacrificed their lives in the revolution of Easter 1916, yet the poet thought it would not be good, because England had already promised to give independence. They should have waited, but revolution took place. The literal meaning of Yeats's poem is clear. He pays tributes to those who sacrificed their lives in the revolution for the achievement of the freedom of England. These secondary meaning sometimes opposes the literal meaning of the poem. The poet says, in respect of one of the martyrs, that had he lived, he would have achieved fame. This idea is full of conceit. The main question is, the man who dies for the nation, has he not fame? No doubt the poem is transitional. Was it needless death after all? A terrible beauty is born. For England may keep faith, a terrible beauty is born. Is death necessary to make revolution for freedom? To the poet, it is a terrible beauty. There is blood shed for freedom. He suggests to keep faith on England. She will fulfill her promise. Thus, the Easter 1916 is a revolutionary poem. Faith in peace is more powerful than the disorder and blood shed. This is the soul of the poetry. The Easter 1916 is a religious, political, historical, and philosophical poem. Yeats comes before us as a philosopher. So far as the artistic point of view is concerned, the style of the poem is philosophical, descriptive, and deductive. Irony is its root. The diction of the poem is simple, lucid, and effective. There are some examples. I have met them at a school of day. A terrible beauty is born. Though the language is simple, yet it is full of grave meaning. Language is not harsh, but with light lullaby. The poem is symbolic. Many symbols have been used. The poem is figurative. He uses alliteration, oxymoron, simile, metaphor, etc. Lastly, the poem is written in the rhyming scheme of ABAB. Thus, the poem Easter 1916 is an immortal poem in English poetic literature. There is double philosophy: nationalism by bloodshed or nationalism by faith, peace, and faith. It is a very ambiguous question. Yeats shows a new way. He wants to say, follow the path of faith. It will bring freedom. Need not any bloodshed, need not be phantom. Peace and faith only can bring all happiness. The poet lastly ends his poem to say, a terrible beauty is born. It is the echo of his soul. It is fully true. It is a question before not only Ireland but for the whole world. So, Yeats is truly a literary philosopher. Now, the explanation of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. I have met them at close of day, coming with vivid faces from counter or dust among grave. 18th century houses I have passed with a nod of the head, or polite meaningless words, or have lingered a while and said polite meaningless words, and thought before I had done of a mocking tale or a gibe to please a companion around the fire at the club, being certain that they and I but lived where mortally is worn, all changed utterly, a terrible beauty is born. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem Easter 1916, composed by one of the greatest modern poets, W.B. Yeats. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses His idea about the common persons who are fighting for the freedom of Ireland against the British power. Explanation. Here the poet says that he has met these men while they were returning from their offices after the day's work was over. And they gathered near a 18th century house. Often he has stopped to exchange a formal conversation with them. Sometimes he has thought what to tell them at a chance meeting. After all, they and the poet live in a society where mask is usual order. Order of the day. Though these people had nothing special about them and they belonged to the common rank, by their death they have been transformed. By this transformation there came a great exchange among the men and women. The poet calls the transformation the birth of a terrible beauty. Now the next stanza of the poem. That woman's days were spent in ignorant goodwill, her nights in argument, until her voice grew shrill. What voice more sweet than hers? When young and beautiful, she roars to harriers. This man had kept a school and rode our winged horse. This other, his helper and friend, was coming into his force. He might have won fame in the end. So sensitive his nature seemed, so daring and sweet his thought. This other man I had dreamed, I drunken, vain glorious lot. He had done most bitter wrong to some who are near my heart. Yet I number him in the song. He too has resigned his part in the casual comedy. He too has been changed in his turn, transformed utterly. A terrible beauty is born. Reference will be seen. The context. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about some persons who are common men and women, but due to their sacrifice, they become immortal because they have given their lives for the freedom of Ireland. Explanation. Here, the poet starts his description about a woman whose name was Constance Markevis, who after her marriage became Constance Gorbooth to him. This lady was foolish and very talkative. When she was young and beautiful, she led herself to be in the clutches of a pack of ruffians. She was not a common lady, but she moved on to sit on dogs which hunt hares. There was another man in the group whose name was Patrick Pearse. He was running a school. He was also a poet. His friend Patrick Donbue was a postmaster. He was the leader of the revolution. He was sensitive and daring. Then there was MacBride in this group. He was a drunkard and lacked moral senses. He was also proud. He had reasons to be annoyed with him. He snatched away the lady named Gone, whom the poet loved and desired to marry. Yet the poet mentioned him as the hero in the Irish struggle for freedom in his poem. To him, all these common men and women had done a lot in the struggle and had been changed into the immortal man. That is how a terrible beauty was born. Now the last stanza of the poem. Hearts with one purpose alone. Through summer and winter seem enchanted to a stone, to trouble the living stream. The horse that comes from the road, the rider, the birds that range from cloud to tumbling cloud, minute by minute by minute they change. A shadow of cloud on the stream changes minute by minute. A horse hoof slides on the brim, and a horse places within it. The long-legged moor hens dive, and hence to moor rocks call. Minute by minute they leave the stones in the midst of all. Too long a sacrifice can make a stone of the year. Oh, when may it suffice? That is heaven's part, our part to murmur name upon name, as another names her child when sleep at last has come on limbs that had run wild. What is it but nightfall? No, not night, but death. Was it needless death after all? For England may keep faith for all that is done and said. We know their dream enough to know they dreamed and are dead. And what if excess of love bewildered them till they died? I write it out in a verse, MacDonald and MacBride and Connolly and Perse, now and in time to be, wherever green is worn, are changed utterly, a terrible beauty is born. Reference will be same context. In these particular lines, the poet W.B. Yeats expresses his idea about the men and women who died in the struggle for freedom of Ireland. Here, Yeats presents a tribute to them for their sacrifice, but he asks a question whether it was right to fight for freedom while England had already promised to make Ireland free. Now, explanation. Here the poet says that the people who gave their lives become stone and stream. There, these two are symbols. Apparently, stone stands for loss of mobility and stream represents change. The poet wants to say that the death of the leaders has distributed the complacency of the Irish people. They have been upset. They hear the poet further shows ambivalence which he does not intend to focus in order to contradict what it stands for, but to make us aware of the complexity of life. According to him, all living beings change. The horse, the rider, the birds that move from cloud to cloud, all change minute to minute. So he says that too long a sacrifice can make a stone of the heart and can bring a number of feelings. He further says that it is just possible that England would grant freedom to Ireland, that freedom for which they dreamed and gave their lives. They did not do wrong by giving their lives, nor their excess love for their country. So the poet sings the glory of MacDonagh, MacBride, Connolly and Perse, and states that their sacrifice was resulted in the birth of a terrible beauty. Thank you. This is the end of the poems of W.B. Yeats.